Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the IBI Group third quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded on Friday, November 9th, 2018. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer of the IBI Group. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our third quarter earnings conference call. Our third quarter earnings were released yesterday afternoon and have been posted on the website for your reference. Joining me on the call this morning is our Chief Financial Officer, Stephen Taylor. Prior to commencing the call, I will ask Stephen to read the following disclaimer about forward-looking statements. Stephen?
Thank you, Scott. On behalf of IBI Group, I'm required to note that some of our statements made today on today's call might contain forward-looking information. We caution listeners not to place undue reliance on our forward-looking statements since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities laws. For further information on risk factors, please view the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities. I'll now turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, David. We are currently forecasting approximately $361 million in total net revenue for 2018. We have approximately $372 million that is committed and under contract for the next 5 years, roughly 12 months of backlog. EBITDA margins and revenues have improved this quarter as a result of significant improvements in our U.S. operations compared to the first and second quarters of 2018. Adjusted EBITDA for the U.S. region this quarter was $0.3 million compared to losses of $2 million and $0.9 million in the first and second quarters, respectively. The improvement is a direct result of the new management structure in the region, the implementation of strong cost-saving initiatives put in place in the first half, and the focus on broadening and diversifying our client base. Management remains committed to realigning our U.S. market sectors with existing business opportunities to further improve operations and financial results. Revenue in Canada increased over the same period from 2017 by 5% and 6% for the year, reflecting strong performance in all sectors. Within our buildings group, we continue to see strength in our mixed-use high-rise practice with a number of major new building projects across the country in Montreal, Mississauga, Vaughan, Vancouver, and in the United States in California. This is in addition to major planning projects related to mixed-use development in Canada and rezoning applications in downtown Toronto. Our infrastructure practice continues its work on major transit projects in Toronto, Ottawa, and Edmonton, and our team the various upcoming opportunities in Ontario. We have also expanded our service offerings in infrastructure with the design of a new transportation command, control, and communication center in Toronto for Metrolinx. Our intelligence practice has had success with new traveler information projects in Ontario and Alberta and various states in the United States. Of note are new tolling projects on the Gordie Howe Bridge, the Mackinac Bridge in the United States, as well as a contract to deliver open road tolling solution in one of our major concession projects in Greece. Our acquisition of GreenL has resulted in a broadening of our mobile information services in various U.S. states and has provided a platform for new offerings in transit information and transportation logistics. Our education practice has continued work in California, Oregon, and Texas, and new work in BC, including the first STEM high school in the province. In the UK, we have been focusing on residential mixed-use development projects, broadening our client base to include more private sector clients. We've also been exporting our knowledge and skill sets in the UK to North America and the Middle East. The intelligence practice in the UK has long-term contracts with Scotland, which include the application of our digital image processing technology to capture highway assets and information from the motorways throughout England. India continues to grow with major work in the deployment of a 50,000-kilometer fiber communications network, new opportunities for our smart city platform, and transportation planning for major infrastructure investors from North America in India. The Middle East remains a strong market for us, with we're continuing on the development of large-scale development and planning projects. And in Israel, work continues on the Red Line LRT project, a vital project in the transformation of Tel Aviv. In October, the company launched BlueIQ by IBI, a real-time energy management solution for urban water distribution. This innovative software assists with the control of water pumps, valves, and the purchase of power, all of which is to minimize the cost of delivering water services to meet the requirements of the public. We see that our pivot to technology-driven design firms is paying in that it is resulting in more work for us, strengthened profile with our clients, improved productivity, as well as strengthening the engagement with our staff. We have new products and clients that I mentioned. One is the BlueIQ that we launched. It is of note that that system is resulting in savings to the City of Toronto that are in the order of $2 million per year on power costs. We continue to work with clients and communities around the world to support the adoption of smarter and more efficient infrastructure, along with Inform, our asset management system, and our smart city platform. This quarter, the company entered into an amended agreement on its credit facilities with its lenders. The amended agreement extends the maturity date, increases the maximum available amount on the swing line facility, and improves on the latest rate margins. On September 27th, the company redeemed the remaining balance of the 7% convertible debentures under Option A for $14.8 million cash financed from the credit facilities. We also reduced all our overall debt by $6.1 million for this quarter. I will now turn the call over to Stephen for an overview of the financials.
Thank you, Scott. This quarter, the company had net income of $8 million, compared with $5.5 million for the same period in 2017. Net income this quarter was inclusive of a pre-tax gain in the fair value of financial liabilities of $4.7 million, compared to a loss of $1.5 million in the same period in 2017. This is the result of changing market conditions, particularly the value of our debentures and common stock in the public markets. It is also inclusive of a foreign exchange loss of $600,000 compared to a gain of $2.3 million for the same period in 2017. This is the result of movement in the Canadian dollar against the U.S. and the pound sterling. The company had net income of $16.8 million for the 9 months ended September 30, 2018, compared to $14.3 million in the same period in 2017. Net revenue increased 2.4% for the quarter to $92 million, compared to $89.8 million for the same period in 2017. This is a result of the continued strength and operating performance in our Canadian markets. Net revenue for the 9 months ended September 30, 2018 was $275.9 million, compared with $274.5 million for the same period in 2017, an increase of 0.5%. Adjusted EBITDA was $10.2 million this quarter, compared to $11.1 million for the same period in 2017. During the quarter, adjusted EBITDA was increased by was impacted by an increase in the cash outflows related to the onerous lease situation in Montreal of $300,000 compared to the same period in 2017. For the 9 months ended September 30th, 2018, adjusted EBITDA was $28.4 million compared to $33 million for the same period in 2017. During the 9 months ended September 30th, 2018, adjusted EBITDA was impacted by the increased cash outflow related to the onerous lease in the amount of $1.8 million compared to the same period in 2017. In 2017, the company finalized a sublease agreement for this particular office premises, at which point an increase in rent expense was recognized as part of net earnings, but it did not impact adjusted EBITDA because the cash was not spent in 2017. The cash outflows related to the onerous lease have the opposite effect this year, with no impact on net earnings, but a reduction in adjusted EBITDA for the 3 and 9 month periods ended September 30th, 2018. Basic and diluted earnings per share were 21 cents per share for the quarter, compared to 15 cents per share for the same period in 2017. The increase was primarily due to an increase in net income of 2.5 million offset slightly by an increase in weighted average number of common shares compared to the same period in 2017. The increase is a result of the exercise of deferred share units and stock options. Basic and diluted earnings per share were 45 cents and 44 cents per share for the 9 months ended September 30th, 2018, respectively, compared to 38 cents per share for the same period in 2017. Basic and diluted earnings per share increased primarily due to an increase in net income, offset slightly by an increase in the weighted average number of common shares outstanding. The increase in the common shares outstanding is, as we said, is a result of the exercise of deferred share units and stock options. Cash flows provided by operating activities increased this quarter to $12.8 million compared to $11.2 million for the same period in 2017, for an increase of $1.6 million. Cash flows provided by operating activities decreased to $11.3 million for the 9 months ended September 30th, 2018, compared to cash flows provided by operating activities of $12.3 million for the same period in 2017. Interest expense this quarter was $4 million compared to $2.5 million for the same period in 2017. Interest expense for the 9 months ended September 30th, 2018 was $8.8 million compared to $7.7 million for the same period in 2017. This increase in interest expense is due to accelerated accretion expense of approximately $1.5 million on the the 7% debentures that we redeemed that Scott mentioned earlier. This has been slightly offset by more favorable interest rates and lower debt balances as a result of our amended credit facilities. Finally, days sales outstanding increased by 2 days to 74 days as of September 30th, 2018, compared to the same period in 2017. This is largely as a result of the timing of receipt of payments on some of the larger projects, and it does not reflect an increasing trend going forward. I'll now turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. Operator, we are now ready to take questions and we'll respond.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question. We have a question from the line of Michael Tupholm with TD Securities from Toronto. Please proceed.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Question, I suppose, for either one of you, but can you talk a little bit about the improvement in the U.S. performance? I guess just talk about where you're at with the restructuring, whether it's fully completed or if there are still elements that are being put in place, and then I guess how we should think about the improvement in that region's EBITDA performance going forward.
Let me start. What we have done is to put in place certainly new leadership in areas of the three sectors that we operate in, of intelligence, buildings, and infrastructure. We have also taken a very concerted effort to integrate the practices up and down the West Coast, especially in the Living Plus area, where we have an excess of need or resources in Vancouver, as an example, and we see tremendous opportunities to follow our clients in Vancouver down along the West Coast. So we are building up capacity and capabilities in California and elsewhere to service the need in Vancouver, but building up the credentials then to be, quote, local as the developers out of Vancouver then move to the south. That's also now resulted in work coming in with new mixed-use high-rise in California. We're also very focused on the infrastructure work in California, especially with Metro, LA Metro, and the major expansion program that they have underway there. So we see that we're in a very strong position on the West Coast, and it's really coming back to where we had originally planned. On the East Coast, we are now initiating a similar thrust to focus on the key development areas and offering a much wider array of services both to the public sector and the private sector, so we have more diversity. And we have put together a team along with the new leadership that is really focused on going after the near-term available opportunities in what we see as the key market areas like Raleigh and as well as the Washington area and maybe laterally Florida. That is going to take a bit of time to realize the full value, but a bit of time is probably two quarters into to next year as we look to secure new work. So that's sort of the overall. We see that we are in a much stronger position now as witnessed by the results for the quarter. We expect that it will get better in the next quarter, and then early in the new year, we should be back into a normal professional business in terms of results. I should say that our intelligence practice in the U.S. has been growing at a very high rate and yielding predictable returns in terms of what intelligence or a technology practice should deliver. Stephen, anything you want to add to that?
Well, Mike, I think we had said before, earlier, that part of the challenge in the U.S. had been caused by a larger contract in the automotive sector that had been canceled on very short notice. That particular operation in Michigan, we've essentially stabilized that, aligned the workforce in the office with the backlog of work that we have going forward. There will be slow and steady recovery in that particular office during the course of 2019. The other factor that we had talked about vis-a-vis the United States is that we have a significant practice in education buildings that are very dependent on bond issuances to provide the funding for their projects. There had been a 1 to 2 quarter delay in those bond issuances coming through, which had impacted our backlog of work in our education offices. We're happy to report that those bond issuances have now come through and that our backlogs are rebuilding in our education offices. So we're expecting them to return to former levels of performance during the first half of 2019 as well.
Okay, that's helpful. I guess just to follow on that, Scott, when you mentioned getting back to sort of a normalized type of professional services performance, but I think you're referring to margin when you say that. What is the target margin for the U.S. operation?
Well, our general guidance on margin is 8 to 12%. Much of our work in the U.S. is government related, so it tends to max out at the 10% level, but that is, that is why we are diversifying more into the private sector. But I don't see that will have a significant impact on our margin for not until the latter part of 2019. So I would suggest that in that guidance of 8 to 12%, it would be more in the lower range of that.
Okay, but safe to say, given the improvements in the business that you've affected and that you've been able to put in place and realize as a result of improved workflow and whatnot, you think you can get back to the lower end of that range in 2019 for the full year?
I would expect so, yes.
Okay, perfect.
And I should say that we've had a very significant pickup in our intelligence practice, which didn't have any slowdown. And our expectation, especially as we deliver solutions such as the Mackinac Bridge, that we would be certainly looking for not only an increase in revenue, but a better margin. The other thing with that kind of work is that it then becomes an annuity in the support of those systems in place. So I would see that by the end of 2019 that we will see something that is more in the, say, 10% range on margin.
Okay, no, that's helpful. Thank you. Within Canada, in your opening remarks, it sounded like you are feeling pretty good about the outlook with respect to transportation opportunities. It wasn't entirely clear to me if these are all situations where you've actually been awarded work or it's more prospects that you're looking forward to. But I guess if you could clarify that and just talk a little bit about the Canadian organic growth outlook, as it may be supported by what you're seeing in transportation.
The first part of what I said is that our work is continuing on the Eglinton LRT, work in Ottawa on the LRT program there, and also in Edmonton. We are doing a significant amount of work now also for the TTC on station design as they look to improve their and expand their network. And we're doing a significant amount of work for Metrolinx, the major commuter rail provider in the Toronto region, or Southern Ontario for that matter. And what I mentioned as the new control center for that organization is just one of the range of services that we're providing to them. As for other major infrastructure work, there's a lot that's on the table as prospects, where we are teams such as the Confederation Line in Ottawa and here in Ontario, as well as the Hamilton system. With the change in government in Ontario, the rate of award has slowed. So we don't anticipate anything that will be a decision on that until sometime the latter part of, or mid part, latter part of 2019. We are also, other major LRT work, or transportation work, certainly there's the next phase to Edmonton that we would be, we'll be pursuing, and then there are opportunities here in Vancouver, in Surrey and Broadway that we're looking to team on. There's still early opportunities, but we see that we have all the skills and credentials and connections to be able to do that work. So
Scott, just to maybe to clarify, so you know you have a fair bit of work in hand already that's keeping you fairly busy within Canada. There are a number of opportunities on the horizon. However, you know the way things move in that particular sector can take some time, and you mentioned the change in government. So should we be thinking about Canada for 2019 as somewhat flattish outlook in terms of organic growth, or is that is there an opportunity to do a little bit better than that?
Well, I don't know if we'll be able to achieve the same growth that we had in this year, but we're certainly anticipating growth. We typically look at in our planning something in the order of 3% growth. And we certainly expect to be able to do that in Canada, if not more.
Okay, no, that's helpful. Thank you. And then just maybe lastly, any update on customer receptivity to the Informed by IBI product suite that you launched in the second quarter? Sort of early indications as to how that's going?
Well, we don't have any big sales. We do have partners that we are working with. We have deployed a pilot with one major financial partner who is assessing the value of it for their purposes. We would anticipate a decision early in the new year about what they might do with that. And we are now working with a healthcare adaptation of the Inform product. It's still early. We've really only been marketing it for about 2 months. So I wouldn't anticipate, and we didn't have anything in our plan that would suggest that we would see anything that would be a significant contribution to either revenue or EBITDA for at least 14 to 18 months.
Okay, thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Martino with Laurentian Bank Securities from Toronto. Please proceed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Chris.
It's Chris standing in for Mona today. You've been delivering very strong growth in international. Could you provide some color around that? And maybe based on the indications you're seeing, would you expect international growth next year to moderate or potentially contract given the 2018 comp period was strong?
We are still seeing, if I look at the regions or the major sort of sub-areas outside of the UK, I'd expect India will continue to grow. I mentioned some of the projects that we're involved with and some of the opportunities. We do see some significant opportunities with the Smart City platform, the doing work for investors out of Canada, in fact, on infrastructure projects in India, and just the general growth of the sort of range of services that we provide. And then there was a very large-scale communications project. So we're very strong on India. And we also see it as being a pivotal contributor to our technology direction, using it to provide timely and low-cost software into the other initiatives that we'll be taking later on the pivot. So India is very strong. Israel, work continues and will continue through 2020 on the 2021-22 on the red line. I don't anticipate that there will be any significant growth over what we're currently doing. In the Middle East, in the backlog looks very strong. The only hesitation that comes into play there is the is governance, but we're certainly anticipating continuing growth in the Middle East. Mexico is very strong for us in terms of some of the systems applications, the tolling in particular. And there are, again, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't have continued growth in Mexico. Greece is an interesting anomaly this year in that we have secured a sizable project, and it's the delivery of an open road tolling system as an appendage to an existing system that we put in place, and that will represent a significant growth in our backlog and growth in revenue for 2018. So more generally, I see international continuing to be quite strong.
Okay, that's great color. Thank you. I guess on the technology side, am I correct in thinking that those tech investments constitute a standalone offering still, or should we expect them to somehow be integrated into the current consulting business?
They will over time become more integrated into the practice. For the moment, they are being presented and marketed as more standalone because they're outside of the way they have to be delivered to market in a much different way than a traditional professional services business. So there's much more emphasis on marketing. There's a common platform. You want to scale. The platform has to be scalable with a lot more emphasis on the marketing side. Many users, one platform, as opposed to our traditional model of one platform per client. So for a while, it will carry on as being complementary to and levering off of our client base, but not necessarily being embedded into the rest of the practice. Over time, though, And the time window, I would say, is sort of a 2 to 2.5 years. There will be continuous evolution of the traditional practices as we apply and adopt more technologies into how everybody works and the efficiencies that are realized from that. The only qualifier I would put on that as a positive qualifier is that we have a major program of applying technology to improve efficiencies through parametric design, through bots, robotic software, that we are seeing very significant improvements across the board. And it's just making it a much more engaging and positive environment for staff. Our objective is to be the Google of architecture and engineering firms, so it just makes it a really engaging and productive and efficient environment for staff. So there are two parts to it. There's the internal efficiency and engagement that we have, and then there's how we go to market with the products and solutions that we have.
Got it. Okay, that's great. Thank you very much. I'll pass the line.
Our next question comes from the line of Maxim Sytchev with National Bank from Toronto. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Max.
Gentlemen, do you mind maybe building on the tech offerings, maybe revenue trajectory? How should we be thinking about this? I mean, I understand it's early days, but maybe any color there, please?
I'll start with the Smart City platform. There are approximately a dozen cities that we've identified that we are pursuing. There are some very positive signs, at least with a few. The other is there's a very long sales cycle. And with two, we're looking at some significant revenue boosts for each of those projects. And then, again, it becomes an annuity. That will build, and the whole idea of the tech pivot, though, is that you end up with one project that has a continuing revenue stream, and then another with a continuing revenue stream and starts to lever off of each other. I would expect that by the end of or the middle of 2019, we'll announce two smart city deployments, additional smart city deployments. Middle of 2019, we'll see two new contracts, if not sooner. Then we have the Inform, which is the asset management system. I would expect, especially interesting now, is the focus on healthcare in this area, where we see that it has particular application. I would expect to see something in the order of one or two, if you will, contracts in the healthcare sector. Where the biggest uncertainty for us is in the private sector, and the biggest leverage is in the private sector because of the sales cycles, although they may be long at the outset. If you can demonstrate value, they can scale up very quickly, and that's where we are applying some focus right now and partnering with some financial institutions to show the value of how it could benefit their bottom line. I don't anticipate in the Inform side, though, in the private sector, that we'll see anything until, again, the middle of 2019. BlueIQ is a long sales cycle. There are about 20 major clients in North America where we could apply it and would realize the kinds of benefits. We're looking at a different business model there where our objective would be to be part of the continuing and benefit from the continuing savings that we're realizing on behalf of the clients. It's still early in the outreach on that. We certainly have a well-identified market, but we'll see. It's a long sales cycle. I wouldn't anticipate anything until the latter part of 2019.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. And Stephen, maybe a couple of questions for you, just housekeeping. In terms of CapEx, how should we think about 2019? I assume right now you're sort of in the budgeting process, so maybe if you can provide any color there.
Sorry, Max, you're talking about cutbacks. Could you clarify, please?
On 2019, if you have any visibility right now for next year.
In respect of overall growth for the firm, or
just on the capital expenditure line.
I'm sorry, I misheard. Yeah, I think that, Max, we will be, we had said, because we had a couple of large office renovations this year that, you know, we were going to come in over 10 on CapEx. I think we will probably come in the vicinity of between 7.5 and 8.5 for next year is where I'm anticipating, because we will have some amounts that we would be capitalizing on the development of software platforms.
Okay, that's helpful. And then on the interest expense, because this quarter was a bit higher, so because of the converts, we should expect this to normalize, correct?
Absolutely. You know, currently our debt numbers, our leverage to EBITDA was 1.9 at the end of the quarter, taking out the CDs that are out there, and at just over 3, but between 3 and 3.1 when you add the CDs in. You know, we're effectively paying an interest rate on that roughly, I think we were, our funded debt was at about $116 million at the end of the quarter, and we're paying an overall interest rate that's around 5 to 5.25 overall with the CDs and what we're paying on the bank lines. So that should give you an indication of I'm not anticipating that debt levels are going to go up. We did generate a strong cash in the quarter. Anticipate that we will still continue to generate cash over the coming quarters, which, as we had said before, will be used to apply to bring the debt balances down. And so, you know, that should give you a rough profile of where we're likely to end up over the next few quarters in terms of interest expense.
Okay, that's very helpful. And maybe just last question. Any major updates on the high-rise market, especially in Canada? What are you guys seeing, pipeline of prospects, any slowdown? Any color, please.
No slowdown. The immigration still is a very strong underpinning to the market. We are seeing greater diversity in the areas where the high-rise building is taking place. I had mentioned Mississauga and Vaughan in Toronto. Well, it's extending out of the core of Toronto into all of the sort of the regional nodes, and that's no less the case in Vancouver and Calgary. What we are seeing is that redevelopment opportunities in large land holdings, especially around shopping centers, as retail changes radically, with more e-commerce, shopping centers become a prime consolidated land site for redevelopment and, if you will, the creation of community nodes and mixed-use high-rise and other kinds of services that we provide in buildings like schools and healthcare facilities. So we don't see any change in that. The combination of the work that we have in hand, as well as the planning work that we're doing and the rezoning that we're doing, we don't see any change in the future.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
We have a follow-up question from Michael Tupholm with TD Securities from Toronto. Please proceed.
Yeah, thanks. Two quick follow-ups. With respect to the UK region, is that, I mean, I know a lot of the work that's done there or has been done there recently actually pertains to some projects that are actually outside the UK, but with respect to margin profile for that, is it reasonable to expect that to get back up again to sort of, you know, as you mentioned, more of a normal kind of professional services margin in your target range, or is the characteristic of that business such that we shouldn't be thinking about that kind of an improvement?
I would suggest that we wouldn't see any major improvement in the margin range in the UK until we see some settlement of Brexit. That being said, because so much of our work is still government-related, but that being said, we are looking to diversify into the private sector. With that, then, an improvement in our margin. But it will take time to have that to be realized in a more significant scale for our UK business. We're still quite concerned about the UK, given Brexit and everything that's happening.
Right, understandable. And then just lastly, Stephen, the adjustments that are being made on a quarterly basis for the increase in cash outflows related to the onerous lease, is that amount that we saw this quarter, the $300,000, is that a relatively stable amount? And how long did these, can you just remind how long these will continue on for?
Yeah, Mike, the $300,000 was the increase over what the same quarter last year. And basically in this facility, we had a subtenant that was in the facility up until the end of March of this year. We have a very high-quality tenant that is moving in on a phased basis over the balance of that they started to move in September, and they're moving in on a phased basis over the course of the next 9 months. So what we're experiencing in cash outflows this year is the cost of things like the real estate commissions that hit us in the first quarter, and then some top up on rent. We're still carrying some of the rent until the new client gets the new tenant gets fully moved in. So some of this will drag in and into 2019, but the amount will reduce during the second half of 2019 to more like what it was last year, which was running at about $250,000 a quarter. And then as we get out the back half of 2019, I'm anticipating that amount will reduce virtually to zero. So that's really the profile of, it's a big, we're $2.5 million already this year that we've paid out on the transitional costs of getting a new tenant into that facility. That's very heavy compared to what we paid in past, and certainly our anticipation is by the time we get into 2020, that number will be virtually reduced down to zero. So,
okay, that makes sense. That's great. Thank you. Yep. Thanks,
Mr. Stewart. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay. Well, thank you everybody for joining us on the call today, and I wish all of you a very happy weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line. Have a great day, everyone.